Hello, and welcome to yet another episode of the Agnostic Salvation Hour. This is your host, Marshall.
And I'm Jennifer.
I'm Cole.
And I'm Michael.
And it's been a while since we've done a show because I have really crappy internet service, DSL, here in Gardner, Kansas. And we made a couple of efforts and we just gave up in frustration because every 30 seconds we would lose connection. Hopefully, and we all prayed to the flying spaghetti monster before the show, hopefully that will not be a problem this episode. But if it is, you guys will never hear any of this. So anyway, everyone, thanks for being here again, and I'm sorry again for all the internet problems that you guys had to deal with my end. I've been so, I wouldn't say busy, kind of the opposite of busy. I've been addicted to Skyrim, the video game.
Ah,
since it's
too know people addicted to Skyrim.
I just want my life back, Skyrim. There's got to be some sort of pill I can take that will make me not want to slay dragons anymore.
I got to do research on this. I've never heard of it.
It's a, it might not be your type of game. It's a role playing. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Elder Scrolls.
No, I'll have to check it out though.
I haven't played it yet, but that's part of the reason why I haven't played it yet. It's because I know it will probably suck most of my life away from me at least for a few weeks.
my interest is waning a little bit. I just played it nonstop for a while, so I'm getting through it. But
don't do it. You'll never come back.
Yeah, I advise that you don't do it. If that's my recommendation. So, anyway.
Just say no.
I play Warcraft, so, you know.
Oh, gosh. You know, I was never able to get into those massively multiplayer, because I can't play I've been doing it with Skyrim, but I can't just dedicate, like, 2 or 3 hours that you have to in a gaming session.
Yeah, it is very true. You can't just sit down for 20 minutes and play. You don't really get very far.
Yes, and also you piss off everybody you're playing with if you know, they spend all that time trying to assemble a party, and then you say, oh, I gotta go, guys. You know, whatever. But anyway. Jennifer, you had some interesting...
I was going to say, well, I have been rather busy, because last weekend I spent down at Skepticon in Springfield. Was the 4th annual Skepticon. They had oh my gosh, how many speakers did they have?
That noise?
Yeah, I don't know. There's a noise.
Sounds like someone's blowing through a straw.
Paul?
No, not me.
Okay. All right. I was just wondering what that was. All right.
I quit blowing through straws a long time ago.
Okay. So, all right, you were at Skepticon.
Yes. Skepticon. There were all kinds of speakers, and of course I don't know what the official total was, but I heard at least 11, maybe 1200 free thinkers, atheists in attendance.
That's less than last year though, isn't it?
It's about the same as last year.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, it's about the same. And met a lot of people that this was their first year coming. You know, got to hang out. Actually, a lot of them were from KC. There were quite a few people from KC that came down that had never gone before, and had a great time hanging out with everybody down there and from the Columbia, from my skeptics in Columbia that I've met before. And
yeah.
So, but
well,
yeah,
a lot of great speakers there once again. They really draw a good crowd of speakers.
Yeah, everybody that we saw was good. The standouts for me were. Let's see, who are my favorites? I'm blanking. Greta Christina. She did a great talk on, which somebody else said she's done this talk at a couple different conventions, but it was the first time I saw it, which was why are atheists so angry, and basically going through the reasons why atheists tend to be angry at religion and why we are justified in being angry, and also how we can use that anger to, you know, fuel the movement towards, you know, more rational thinking, and hopefully getting rid of or minimizing the amount of influence religion has on our culture and on our lives. And yeah. So her talk was really, really good. And I know I'm going to mispronounce his name, but he's also known as the friendly atheist, Hemant Mehta. Is that how you say it?
Hemant Mehta.
Hemant Mehta. Okay. I see. I told you I was going to mispronounce it. Anyway, he was great. He did a talk on math and why it's important in everyday society, and how basically we don't teach math very well in schools, and we don't teach you how to actually critically think using math. We just teach you the formulas. So it was a really good, actually made me kind of rethink the way I approach math. So I thought it was really good. And of course, all of these talks will eventually be up on the internet, and I'll try to keep you updated as to when they are, but those were great. And then Daryl's talk, of course, was awesome. It was all about his research that he had done into sexuality and religion. And David Fitzgerald was my other favorite, which he did talk on Mormonism and how it's crazy. And that one is up on the internet. You can go see that now. David Fitzgerald's talk on Mormonism from Skepticon. So yeah.
Mormonism really is some bad shit, crazy stuff.
Yeah, it takes craziness to a whole new level. But
that's why I got to believe that, like, Romney and Huntsman probably know, okay, this is just stupid, but... You know, they can't just come out and say, I don't really believe any of this stuff, guys. I just want to let you know. Without just throwing away, everything in their life.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, because they're too smart. I mean, those guys are very intelligent individuals, and
They're not idiots.
No, and if you listen to his talk, it's rather apparent that anybody who believes in this stuff and knows anything about the history of the Mormon Church has to be in some sort of massive denial about what it is they believe, because, oh my gosh, and he's writing a book on it. This talk is he's written a book on Mormonism that's coming out, I think, this next year. So I was just like, wow. I mean, I knew that it was crazy, but I didn't know it was that crazy.
Is he a former Mormon, this guy?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
He also wrote a book called Nailed, and it's basically kind of going through how there is no historical evidence for Jesus and stuff. So
I heard that was an excellent book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, all these talks will be on YouTube in the next week or two.
Yeah.
I'll try to keep everybody updated. And of course, this was the first Skepticon that had some controversy.
Yes.
There was a downtown business posted a sign that said basically the skeptics were not allowed in his Christian business, which caused a lot of stir amongst all of us, wondering what brought that on. And you know, and of course, it's actually illegal to do that because you can't discriminate against a group of people because of their religious beliefs. And the first apology that he wrote, which was basically I didn't think it was an apology. It was more of a, I'm going to cover my butt now statement, which was, this was stupid. I shouldn't have done that. Everybody that came into my business was treated with respect. And he said he witnessed one event that caused him to become angry and to post this. So everybody was thinking, what could this be? You know, and I was thinking, oh, maybe he saw a shirt or overheard a conversation that he didn't like and then was angry and posted a sign. Well, it happened to be that he came in. His business was slow, and he happened to walk in on Saturday night at our last presentation, which was none other than Sam Singleton, doing his new one-man show, which was basically a revival, an atheist revival, making fun of Christian revivals. So apparently he walked in while everybody's standing up and, you know, blasphemy, saying goddamn, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And he got angry and offended by that.
Then he yelled, "No gelato for any of you," and stormed out of the building.
Yeah, basically. So, I kind of have some criticisms of that, because I'm thinking, really, you don't have this lovely thing called the internet? Because he said he thought maybe Skepticon had something to
UFOs.
Do with UFOs.
Yeah, and this is the fourth year. I find it a little difficult to believe that he didn't have a better idea of what was going on in there, but I don't know.
But should we really be surprised by this? I mean, to use a biblical term, you are in the lion's den. Springfield, Missouri is home to the general headquarters of the Assemblies of God, mm-hmm. in the Baptist Fellowship, Baptist Bible University. I mean, it is the heart of the Bible Belt down there, or one of many hearts of the Bible Belt. It's cool that it's down there, but man, that's it's Fundy land down there.
Yeah, no, that's part of, honestly, what I think makes it so much fun is the fact that it is right in the middle of all of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think all's well that ends well, because he issued his second apology, which sounded much more sincere, and he got offended. And, you know, I can't blame the guy for getting offended. I would be offended if I walked into a Christian revival and saw people throwing their, you know, medicine bottles up on the stage, because I know that those people actually need that medicine, that, mm-hmm. you know, they're not being healed by some spirit from on high, you know. But I would like to think that I wouldn't run out and put on my business up a sign that says no Christians allowed in my atheist business. So
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, so, and there's a lot of debate within the atheistic internet community about how forgiving we should be. And I wasn't there, and I don't really care. If I ever make it down to Springfield, I probably won't frequent his shop, but it's not something that's really a major issue with me.
My personal thoughts are, I think that if we want people in society to, and you know, I'm not saying that we should bow and scrape to anybody at all, mm-hmm. but I think if we want to show people that we aren't, you know, out for blood, that we are willing to work together with people, I mean, we should recognize that he made a mistake, and he's owning up to it, and you know, I'm fine with it. We went in there before all of this, and we were treated just fine. The gelato was good. You know, I'm not going to say the gelato was bad all of a sudden just because he, you know, did something stupid. And I think the other thing is too is the atheist community actually reached out to him to ask him what happened. So this was also, the second apology was also at the urging of some of atheists, I think some of the guys that are down in Springfield, saying, hey man, what happened? You know, we don't want to make you upset or anything like that. So I don't know. There are some people that think we should not, you know, accept his apology, but I just kind of think, you know what, you know, as long as he knows what he did was wrong and he's willing to admit that he was wrong, I think sometimes you just kind of have to let stuff go.
Well, I agree with you. And I, you know, if I go down next year, I'll go to his shop.
So,
Well,
go ahead, Michael.
I think you have the right attitude. I'm not for holding grudges either. I just, you know, with this guy, he would never think about putting a sign saying no blacks ladder.
Yeah.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah. That's what I was about to say is because it really isn't any different. And what do we think? I mean, if he had said, hey, we had a conference of the NAACP, and I happened to walk in there, and I heard some rap music, and it offended me, so I went over to my shop and put up a no black people allowed in this white business. I mean, what kind of reception would that have received? I mean, I don't know. I want to be the bigger person, and I'm you know, this isn't a pressing issue with me, but I don't really see a whole lot of difference. Outside of the fact that we're not a...
Well, the thing of it is, he did apologize.
Yes, he did.
And so I think that says a lot. And he overreacted. I mean, he just didn't rationalize about this. You know, he didn't think to ask more questions or what this is, that this was the only show that this Sam Singleton was there for the whole time. Of course he wasn't, but...
Yeah.
Well, and I actually agree with you, Marshall, in a lot of ways. Like, I, you know, if other people don't want to forgive him for his mistake, you know, I perfectly understand why they don't want to. I perfectly understand, because actually there were some people, you know, there were some black atheists that were there, and they were really upset about it because, yeah, it's not been that long since there have been, you know, signs posted saying no blacks allowed and stuff like that. So they were really upset about it. And I can totally understand why, you know, I won't fault somebody if they say they don't want to forgive the guy. You know, I'm not saying that they're wrong. I just, you know, and just my personal feeling is I don't hold grudges. So I just kind of, you know, as long as the guy is sincere and.
Well, that's just it. You know, I mean, I think now, I'm not encouraging people not to go there, but I do wonder, you know, how sincere he really was, because it's possible that his lawyer just said, "Man, this is you need to make some people happy. You need to rescind everything you said and make us, you know, a serious apology, because you could actually be in trouble for this."
Well, that's why I say I'd like to go, because I'd like to talk to the guy. I'd like to ask him questions.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that was suggestion was made on some of the posts that I was reading is, hey, this is a perfect opportunity to open a dialogue and say, hey, why don't you bring some of your Christian friends in, and we'll bring some of our atheist friends in, and we'll just sit down and talk. And, exactly. You know.
Yeah.
And I think that's honestly a great way to resolve that situation. I don't know if that'll actually happen, but I think that's a great thing to do, because then you kind of open a dialogue between two different viewpoints, and maybe you can find some common ground there.
Yeah, we do that here in our groups, you know, with different churches. And so I think that'd be excellent.
Mm-hmm. Well.
So
audience, if you go to Skepticon next year and you want some gelato, I don't personally think there's anything wrong with going there. But like Jennifer said, if this is something that you just can't get past, then I don't blame you for not going either.
Yeah, no, I don't. Like I said, I thought their stuff was tasty. We were happy when we went. So, I mean, you know, I will at least say that. I wasn't treated badly. I wasn't, you know, they had some art in there. We looked at the art, you know.
Okay.
So I had a pleasant experience.
All right. Next on the agenda, Jennifer.
Well, I did have one thing. Yeah, that's something I did learn about at Skepticon that I think we need to start advertising now, and maybe we can get a bunch of people from all around the world, and, you know, well, maybe not the world, but at least the United States, and probably possibly from the KC area to go, which on March 24th, 2012, it's a Saturday, they're going to have Reason Rally in Washington, D.C. And it's going to be the largest gathering of largest gathering of secularists in the nation for one day. And they're going to have speakers. Richard Dawkins is going to speak. P.Z. Myers is going to speak. James Randi will be there. Bad Religion will be playing. So it's basically going to be a big rally.
Bad Religion will be playing?
Bad Religion is going to be playing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I've heard of them.
But yeah, it's supposed to be like a big one-day rally, and they didn't say who exactly was going to be there, but there will be politicians there, because the whole point is to get together and say, yes, we are secularists. Yes, we think that, you know, you should be listening to us. You should be listening to atheists. We aren't just a fringe group. We aren't, you know, we are a growing group of people, and you don't have to kowtow to the religious, you know, right just to, you know, get into office. That there are those of us out here who really, you know, don't want to see. And that even goes for some religious people too. A lot of religious people are smart and understand that a secular nation means they can practice their beliefs in freedom. And if they don't, you know, stand up for those, they could lose their way of, you know, worship. So
absolutely. And you know, I've got actually a couple related articles that I want to discuss that really kind of ties into that. And I'm glad to hear about that.
And I was just going to say too, and then immediately following after Reason Rally, the American Atheist National Convention is also happening in Washington, D.C., and it's on the 25th and 26th. So I'm kind of hoping I'm going to be looking for maybe catching a bus. I'm hoping we can maybe either have a bus leaving from Kansas City that we can all get on and party all the way to D.C. and party all the way back. And
make sure you stop by Chicago to pick me up.
All right, yeah.
Might be a little bit out of the way, but you might have to swing down to Evansville or something like that. All right. East St. Louis.
Oh, I'll stay away from East St. Louis.
on their website, reasonrally.org, they do have a list of places they already are going to have buses leaving from, and it's Arkansas, Connecticut, Indiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, New York, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, or Virginia. And of course, that list may grow as there's more interest.
Or so. you know what would also be fun. You can't charter this, but a train ride. I don't know if you've ever taken a long distance train ride, but it's like really relaxing.
Yeah,
I've done it a couple times. I enjoyed it quite a bit. But you know, a bus. I probably be cheaper to transport a large number of people than everyone having to buy their own train tickets. So, but anyway, tying in, as you mentioned, the importance of the First Amendment and how it doesn't just protect atheists from, so we don't have to be religious, but it also protects the religious people in this country who want to be the religion of their choice. Turns out, this is according to freethoughtblogs.com, and I can't remember who exactly wrote this, and Ed Bratton. We've talked about Brian Fisher before, one of the biggest jerk-offs on the face of the planet, and at the same time, leader of the American, oh gosh, I don't want to get the name wrong, American, Michael, Family. You probably know.
American Family Association.
American Family Association, all right. One of the biggest idiots, literally, in the country, in my opinion. He is convinced that the First Amendment really only applies to Christians. You know, and the fact that the Constitution or the Bill of Rights don't actually specifically say that, you know, to him that was implied. Now, how was it implied? I don't know.
Right.
But he thinks it's
for coming to this conclusion.
Yeah, well, because there were a bunch of Christians who wrote the Constitution, and Christian wouldn't write a Constitution without mandating a belief in Jesus. Obviously, no Christian could possibly be secular. Of course, he's full of shit. And one thing he's done recently, in October, is indicated that clearly the Constitution, the First Amendment, was not intended to protect Mormons, the rights of Mormons in this country, because they're not really Christians. Here's what he says. One evidence that the Founding Fathers weren't even intending to deal with non-Christian religions, is that what they did with Mormonism in the later part of the 19th century. Of course, I'm not sure how exactly the Founding Fathers would have dealt with Mormonism at the later part of the 19th century, given the fact that they were all dead.
Right.
But apparently, because the government does not allow marriage, multiple marriages, polygamy, that's a clear indication that freedom of religion is not protected, of non-Christians is not protected by the First Amendment. And of course, if you ask a Mormon if they're Christian, they'll tell you, yes, we're Christian. But and here's the point. Here's why the First Amendment is so important. It's because you got people like Brian Fisher and Michelle Bachmann and other Christians who would be more than happy to say, no, you're not really a Christian, therefore you're not really protected by the Constitution.
Right.
And that's why it drives me crazy when I see Christians so opposed to the freedom of religion in this country, when it's their freedoms that's protecting just as much as it is ours.
Right.
And I don't know. When I hear, and it's normally the Tea Party crowd, not entirely, but normally, talking about how this really is a Christian nation and it was intended to, even though the Constitution doesn't mention God, doesn't mention Jesus, doesn't mention Yahweh, or Christian nation. It just drives me crazy, because this is a huge threat to all of us if these people got their way. Because if people like Brian Fisher were ever gained power in this country, I'm not even sure a podcast like this would even be legal.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. You know, this has to do with what you're talking about, Marshall. I don't understand. Now, look, I'm not endorsing any political party or candidate. I really can't stand politicians, Democrat or Republican. But I think of someone, the Bible geek, Bob Price. I mean, he's a big fan of candidates closely associated with Brian Fisher. I don't understand that. I mean,
I
mean, these people aren't going to be friendly towards you if they were to get in office. Why do you continue to endorse these people? I mean, he endorses these people on his podcast.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm getting off. I'm just frustrated.
And I would, you know, I understand the frustration because, like, my parents are, you know, my mom's goes back and forth between saying she's atheist and pagan, and my dad's an agnostic, and they endorse, you know, candidates too. And they've even flat out said, they said, no, I don't like their social policies, but I like what they're standing for when it comes to the, you know, the other stuff, the economic and the foreign policies and things like that. And that's so difficult to, you know, so I understand being caught between a rock and a hard spot on, you know, do you endorse somebody who supports your social things, or do you endorse somebody who's, you know, endorses other ideas that you like, you know? So it's why I hate politics.
Right. Well, not again, but I'm, believe it or not, I would be considered to the right on a lot of issues. I'm more of the libertarian side. Sure. Personally, I like Ron Paul, but that's, I don't want to, but, I don't want to get off on that, but your parents are—they're at least reluctantly, they at least sound reluctant. What I don't understand are free thinkers like Bob Price who almost glowingly endorse these people. It just doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. So, thought I'd get that off my chest. Sorry if I've offended anyone in the audience, but
well, you can certainly be a libertarian and understand why a Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann and Perry are people that we really don't want in charge of this country.
No, they're not the audience. They're
theocrats.
Yeah. And it certainly, this does not apply to every Republican. It just doesn't apply to most libertarians that I know.
Right.
But it certainly does apply to those individuals who are somehow taken very seriously in this country, and I just don't get it.
Right, and like someone like John Huntsman, he is very open to science, and you know, and I don't, you know, regardless of what we think of Romney, I don't think he's controlled by the. He is a Mormon. He's not controlled by the evangelical fundamentalist Christian right, and obviously Huntsman isn't either. So this isn't a partisan thing at all.
No, I am usually very hesitant to discuss politics on this show because that's not the focus of it. You know, I'm left-leaning. I consider myself a left-leaning moderate. Very right-leaning on some issues and very much a liberal on others, but that's not the focus of the show. But when certain politicians, kind of thrust themselves into our discussions about religion, then I'm not going to not talk about it. It just, unfortunately, it happens to be that the majority of those politicians are on the far right of our political scale.
Well, that was actually kind of like one of the talks at Skepticon was Rebecca Watson, and basically talking about how the conservative party in general, the right-wing conservatives, the Christian conservatives, are basically having war on women right now, you know, with the way that they've been. And it's interesting because they're kind of going against what the majority of people in the nation really want. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going out of their way to try to make, you know, abortion as difficult to get as possible. They're going out of their way to make sex education, you know, as difficult to get as possible, and contraceptives and things like that, you know, defunding of Planned Parenthood, even though only 3% of their of what they do is abortions, and the rest of it is wellness, you know, exams, and for men and women, not just for women, you know. So it's you know, and if you talk to them, of course they're not against women, of course they don't hate women, but it kind of seems like they do with some of the stuff, some of the policies that they, you know, champion and uphold. So that's part of the reason why I can't call myself a conservative, because, man, you know, that's just not it at all, you know.
Yeah.
What I'm for or anything like that. I get, you know, so I don't know. It's just, it's amazing the things, you know, at least the one went down in what was it, Georgia, where they were trying to give a zygote personhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's bothering because it has so many implications that, you know, it's a very intrusive policy to go that far. And I know that we probably have some listeners who are anti-abortion, and I, you know, I, not really wanting to go down that road. But
well, I think most, I mean, just speaking for myself as an atheist, I don't want to see abortions.
Right.
You know? Yeah, no, I'm not necessarily pro-abortion.
I mean, but pro-women's rights, for sure.
Yeah.
But there's other ways. I mean, there's other things we should be promoting to get less abortions.
Yes.
Not to start a debate, I happen to be pretty pro-life, but, you know, I've obviously moved to the left since my deconversion. I used to be against contraception. I used to think of, even if a woman is raped or if her physical life was in danger, she shouldn't be able to have an abortion. I'm totally for, even though I'm still pro-life on the abortion issue, I'm for contraception, and I believe it would be, you know, cruel to deny a woman the choice to have an abortion if she were raped or her physical life were in danger. So, you know, I mean, there's a spectrum on this.
And absolutely.
These personhood amendments, they're very problematic, even to someone like me who probably is more to the right than many free thinkers on
this. Yeah, I mean, one of the issues is that it can actually affect the legality of certain contraceptive devices.
Right.
And, yeah, and that's how they approached the subject, was basically that, number one, because some people believe, you know, that taking the birth control pill means that you could have a fertilized egg and it just won't implant because of the, and it's like, I don't think that's not how it works, number one. Number two, it would also criminalize miscarriages.
Right.
And, you know, those kinds of things. Like, what do? You arrest every woman that's had sex? Because, you know, conservative estimates are that 60% of fertilized eggs never implant and cause pregnancy. So, you know, like, what do all women in the United in that, you know, state suddenly become criminals if they have sex? You know, so it's just kind of, they basically said, this is just too overreaching.
So God's the biggest abortionist of all, huh?
Yeah, he is. Literally.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and then the Old Testament especially isn't exactly friendly to non-Israelite babies.
No, exactly. And, of course, William Lane Craig justifies that by saying that, well, sure, they killed a bunch of babies, but those babies all went to heaven by virtue of the fact that they were killed at some random arbitrary age.
Just the mention of that guy's name makes me want to vomit. I can't
stand it. I'd have to agree, too.
Yeah.
But you know, given that logic, you would think that the average Christian would be pro-abortion because you're just sending babies to heaven.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. There you go.
What could be nicer? Right. You know,
they don't have to suffer. You know,
if you took seriously what William Lane Craig says on that, the most moral thing you could do is go to the mall and kill every child you see. You know,
send them all to heaven.
Yeah, they're all going to heaven. You're a hero. Amen.
Oh, you're sick, Marshall.
William Lane Craig is the sick one in this one.
Oh, okay.
Because he has absolutely no qualms.
On a future podcast, what we need to do is play the YouTube video of William Lane Craig saying the most convincing evidence for the truth of Christianity is the inner witness of the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
Ooh.
On a future episode, we need to do that.
That would do it for me.
Which, I don't even know what that means, to be honest with you. you know, I always, when I was a devout Catholic, I always was trying to test these teachings of the Bible. Or like, why can't I hear the Holy Spirit, man? Other Christians say they can hear it. What's wrong with me? Am I some sort of am I defective? I mean, because I sincerely wanted to be moved by the Holy Spirit, or move objects through faith.
Well, you didn't hear him because he's not there.
Yeah, that was eventually my conclusion. all right, let's not go on anymore about William Lane Craig, or I'll start punching things.
Not about Craig, but as a evangelical fundamentalist Protestant, I was always told, yes, I have the Spirit, but I'm not baptized. I had to be baptized in the Spirit with the initial evidence of speaking in tongues. So I had the Spirit, but I wasn't baptized in it. So,
I spoke in tongues once. I was kind of forced into it.
Same here.
I was in the Army. I'd just gotten out of training, and I was sent to Fort Ord, California. And I was in a barracks where they kept you before you were assigned to your battalion. And some guy, I don't know what his rank was, but he went in there and offered to take everyone to his church. And I was like, I got nothing else to do. Sure, I'll go. Well, I was a Catholic.
Bad idea, Marshall.
Yes, it was a bad idea. I grew up a Catholic, and at this service, there was a lot of standing and clapping during the songs, and I was fine. I could deal with that, but I can't get into that. You know, you don't do that as a Catholic. But then they started speaking in tongues. Everybody. And I was like, oh my God, what the fuck is going on here? And I was starting to like getting really uncomfortable because this was just beyond freaky to me. But then it got worse. The pastor notices that I'm the only one in the building not speaking in tongues. Oh. He silences everybody. How? I don't know, because obviously he had the control of the Holy Spirit in order to do that. And makes me come up front and just puts me in the spot and tells me to start speaking in tongues. And I just start making this, I didn't want to, but I didn't know where I was. I did not want to piss these people off because I was totally at their mercy. So I started making gibberish sounds and they started saying hallelujah and celebrating the fact that the Holy Spirit had saved another person.
Well, what do you mean by he made you come up front?
He stopped everybody. He said, come up front. You're not speaking. You know, you're not. I don't remember what he said, but it was years ago. But he made
me kneel. How old?
I was like 21. So I had to kneel in front of the entire congregation with my arms out. And I was just going, ah, blah, 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 blah. And I knew this is so ridiculous. I knew this wasn't the Holy Spirit. First of all, you would think that the Holy Spirit would have something a little more intelligent to say than abba-labba-labba-labba-labba. You know, I would hope. But the entire audience was excited because and the pastor was like, hallelujah, the Holy Spirit is speaking through him and stuff like that. It was a really unusual situation. I was
What you were saying?
I knew I wasn't saying anything. I knew I was just making gibberish sounds. But it got him to leave me alone. But after about 5 minutes, he let me go back to my seat. But I literally had to do that for like 5 minutes in front of everyone. I mean, it was horrible.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. Next story. We were just talking about the importance of secularity, essentially. How important it is to respect the First Amendment. Newt Gingrich, who is one of the leading Republican candidates, does not agree with that statement. Recently, when asked about atheism, he basically said that atheists have no business in the White House. And here's what he said, quoting, "Does faith matter? Absolutely," Gingrich said. And I'm getting this from Secular News Daily, by the way. He goes on to say, "How can you have judgment if you have no faith? How can I trust you with power if you don't pray?" He goes on, "The notion that you are endowed by your Creator set a certain boundary of what we mean by America." He goes on eventually to say that Americans should value religion first above morality and knowledge. Religion is more important than morality and knowledge.
And people wonder why atheists get upset or angry at Christians.
Yeah.
He would rather... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the next statement I would want to ask him is like, oh, so would you be okay with the Muslim in the White House?
Right.
Because, if faith is all you need, then you should be fine with Muslim in the White House, with the Buddhist in the White House, with a pagan in the White House. Anybody that just has faith, because to people like him, having faith is always a good thing. So it shouldn't matter what you have faith in. But if you pressed him, he would say, "Oh, well, it should only be a Christian, of course."
That's
you know,
right. he specifically means Christianity. And, you know, what, isn't he on his third marriage? I mean, he promotes
exactly. kind
of holy roller, self-righteous,
right.
whatever.
God has a plan.
In fairness to Newt Gingrich, he's only divorced one wife while she was in the hospital with cancer. I'm pretty sure that the other wife had some sort of other ailment, but she did not have cancer, just the first one, which makes him a total scumbag because he actually did that.
Well, and you know, this brings up another thing for me. Like, there's some local commentators that I like to listen to, political commentators, because most of the time, even though I don't agree with them all the time, I at least know where they're coming from and why they think the way they do.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, one of them made the statement that, you know, I just couldn't vote for an atheist. And I was sitting here thinking, you know what? F you. I have to sit there and say, gee, which Christian do I want to vote for this year?
Yep.
Because there's nobody, well, I won't say nobody, but there hasn't been anybody in my area that has run for public office that isn't either Christian or Jewish or, you know, some sort of religious, you know, of some religious persuasion. So my thing is like, you know what, I have to hold my nose if that's, you know, if that's the thing that I don't want to vote for is for somebody who's really religious and pick, you know, which is the lesser of the evils to me. So to say that you wouldn't vote for an atheist, even if you agree with everything they stand for, but just because they're not an atheist, you wouldn't vote for them, I'd say F you. I'm sorry to anybody who, you know, but that's kind of my thing.
You don't have any Jews running for office down by you, do you?
Not that I'm aware of, but you know what I'm saying. Yeah, it's just the whole idea of,
I probably
know.
Wouldn't have any problem with a Jew running for office because most of them are secular. Yeah.
Well, obviously we don't have that much problem voting for a Christian because that's the only option we normally have. And I'll be honest with you. I don't even really care. If we have two candidates, one's a Christian, an evangelical Christian, and one's an atheist, I'm not going to vote for the atheist because he's an atheist.
Right.
Right.
I'm going to vote for the person who best represents my my opinions and my personal policies.
We have the straw sound again.
I know.
That's exactly why so much emphasis on religion should just be gone. I mean, because you know, there's a lot of people that if they didn't talk about the religion, I might vote for them.
What is that noise?
I don't know. I honestly don't know who it's coming from.
What is it?
I don't know. It sounds like scratching or I don't know.
I don't know where it's coming from, or I don't hear it now.
Anyway, audience members, email us if your best guess as to what that noise was.
Okay.
What? It sounds like somebody is writing or something. I don't know.
Did you hear what I said?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
It's just this background noise. It's not doing it now.
I'm not hearing it.
So anyway.
But yes, I agree. I don't vote for, you know, someone simply because they're atheist or whatever. I go for whoever most closely fits my ideas of, you know, because I, you know, I'm totally fine with the Christian who's secular, you know, who says,
exactly.
You know, my beliefs are my beliefs, but when it comes to the nation, you know, we need to treat everything like it's secular.
Yeah.
You know, that's totally fine with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gingrich is just another one of those theocrats, along with Bachman and Perry. Although, I mean, has Perry, well, he said the Ten Commandments are good policy, and he had the prayer rally, but I don't know if he's ever, as I said, if he said anything as outrageous as that. But yeah, I'd say those are the three main theocrats who are running for office.
Yeah, well, I mean, Perry associates with Brian Fisher, the aforementioned total lunatic. So that's a big red flag,
yeah,
right there. Of course, he's been proven to be just a complete moron, and I don't think anyone takes him seriously anymore. But he was amazingly the front runner at one point.
I'm kind of hoping that that his ship has sailed.
Yes,
that way.
God. Honestly, that. The fact that he is a Christian isn't what bothers me. The fact that he associates with Brian Fisher would prohibit me from voting for him. That by itself. If I agreed with him on every other issue, but Brian Fisher was a friend of his, I don't think I could vote for him. Because Brian Fisher is essentially a Nazi, in my opinion. And I hate to go the Godwin route, but He's a fascist. Let's not say Nazi, but he is a fascist.
There we go.
He meets every definition of the word fascist that exists. And yeah, I couldn't vote for a person who would not be willing to openly condemn Brian Fisher. All right, so enough of Newt Gingrich. I've never liked him ever. He's just goofy looking. You know, I don't know if I could vote for him just because of that by itself. Okay. All right. What's the next story that I have on my iPad? Oh, the official site of Michael Crook. He's a Mormon. I don't think he... Oh, gosh. And his website's gone. Michael Crook, he wrote a book called...
That's the last name, Crook.
Yeah. Leaveth Not Zion, a re-Mormon's experience. I don't know what a re-Mormon is. I guess that he left and came back. He's written a couple of books. He's a speaker. Dang it. This website's gone. I can't quote him. Well, he basically said that there's no such thing as rape, that essentially... If you're a woman,
I heard about this.
Yeah, if you're a woman, based upon his understanding of Mormon teachings, if you're a woman and you're being raped, you must fight even unto death to prevent it from happening. If you're raped and you're still alive at the end of the rape, you were asking for it. You wanted it, essentially. And it shouldn't be a crime because it doesn't exist. Murder exists, but rape doesn't.
That's
supported by the Bible.
Yeah. Well, it also comes to mind first is Islamic law.
Yeah. Well, I think this even goes, Muslims will say that rape does exist, but they just make it very difficult to prove it. And they also argue, you're right, because they also argue if you're raped, then you probably did something to deserve it. You were wearing something too revealing or whatever.
A bad location.
Yeah.
You were someplace you weren't supposed to be unescorted.
Right. Yeah. This is a very common attitude among right-wing religious types towards rape. This movement to push the blame on the victim. We're seeing that expressed more and more often.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, a lot of Christians don't understand. It's supported by the Bible, too. The Bible basically says that if you are if you're in a city and you're being raped and you don't scream, then you are complicit.
Not just that you don't scream, but if nobody hears you scream, you're complicit and you have to be killed.
Right. If you're out in the country and you scream, and nobody hears you, that's not all your fault because there might not be anybody around to hear you scream. Mm-hmm. But basically, yeah, it's the idea that you should fight for your virtue to the death. So you should die rather than be raped is basically what it's basically saying.
Well, you know, so often, I mean, after rape, you know, the woman's killed. And studies have shown in the past, and I don't know what they show now, but they, you know, have shown that if a woman goes along with it, and doesn't fight, it's more likely she'll be alive after it's over with.
Yeah.
And I think it depends on location because I've heard I've heard if you make a bunch of ruckus, they'll leave you alone because they don't want to be caught.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if these studies are still the same or not. But
it's probably true, but if you're being abducted in public, if you're being abducted, there's almost no chance you're going to survive. You do not allow yourself fight to the death because otherwise you're dead.
Right,
you're going to be raped and left for dead and killed. But if it's a situation where it's not a public situation, you know, you're not in public, what you said is probably true, that a woman who just
I know, it's awful.
Yeah,
terrible. Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. But if a woman's thinking about her life that would be a better option, but it's still terrible.
I'll be honest. I'd rather, you know, not that I want either to happen to me, but I would rather be raped and be alive than, you know, somebody kill me.
Yeah.
You know, so because I think in the past I've said I've uttered the words, if you rape me, you better kill me because I'll come get you. But, you know, but honestly, in all honesty, when it comes right down to it, I would rather be alive, because being alive is, sure, you know, sure. I can find ways to get over being raped. I can't find ways to get over being dead. So,
well, of course, according to Michael Crook, if you're alive after you're raped, you weren't raped, which is just mind boggling. I just,
yeah.
He obviously caught some flack because he got rid of his website.
Oh, yeah.
Thankfully, it's down. Yeah.
Yeah. But
that's,
you know,
appropriate last name for the guy.
Yes. But again, we've heard this thing being said before.
Yeah. Well, I just don't know if it's just me paying more attention to it, or is this just starting to become more of a thing to blame the victim more now?
I'm hearing it more. Yeah. Maybe that's because of the internet or something. You know, we're just hearing things more. But. Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of it.
I heard on a radio show, on a Christian radio show one time, a preacher said that a woman that is raped, she shouldn't have an abortion because this is God's plan.
Yeah, I've heard that a number of times.
Yeah.
That it was, yeah, God planned the rape, which makes him complicit and legally a rapist.
Yes.
You know, the sad thing that breaks my heart is that there is a time in my life when I would have approved of that kind of thinking. I can't believe it myself to this day.
God wanted you to be raped. I know. You know, there's a time in my life where I would never have had that attitude. I would have said, you know, it's horrible. I sympathize. And but you still got to have the baby. I don't say that anymore. But
right. Yeah.
The passage that people would use for that kind of situation is Romans 8:28. God works out all things for good for those who love him or are called according to his purpose. So, you know, they would say, well, the rape, you know, it was horrible that happened to you, but God has given you a baby through it, you know, so rejoice.
Right, a baby that's going to remind you every single day or the rest of your life that you were raped. Great. You know,
I don't think my faith. Well, go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I don't think my faith could survive this notion that God was instrumental in someone's rape, so they could have a child. That God was the behind the scenes motivator of that guy to go rape this woman, because now you can have a child. This is so wonderful. You know, I would like, okay, I'm in real trouble with this.
No partner to help you. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, yeah.
And who are these people we're hearing saying these things are men?
We'll hear some women say it too. I've heard women say
there are some women.
I've never heard that from women.
Yeah.
Well, there are women who are very, very backwards views on this subject. No doubt about it.
I guarantee you, Michelle Bachmann would say something like that. She probably doesn't want to talk about it.
Well, I remember, and again, I'm not a fan of Harry Reid at all, so don't take this as an endorsement of Harry Reid, but I remember his opponent in the last election, Sharon Engel, in Nevada, she said that women who are raped and get pregnant should have the baby because God has a plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well,
this is the reason why God needs to go away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, this is the reason why public policy should not be based upon religious beliefs at all.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Speaking of, this is a connected topic. I'm getting this from themailonline.com, which is a British website, news website. Saudi women with attractive eyes may be forced to cover even them up. Resolution is passed, which is kind of an odd way to word that. But essentially, in Saudi Arabia, where it is still technically, I think it's technically still illegal for them to drive, isn't it, women?
It's illegal for them to drive.
It still is.
I can't remember. Yeah, okay.
Didn't they get something passed, though?
I can't expand
their freedom a little bit, maybe when it comes to driving. I thought I remember reading about that.
But
I thought I did too, but I can't.
I think it's getting better.
Yeah, I think they're willing to not enforce it as harshly. Right. But, you know, the good news, I mean, obviously, the only reason a woman would ever even want to drive is so they could go have sex with a stranger. That's literally the fear that exists in Saudi Arabia is, you know, you give a woman the freedom to drive somewhere, she's just going to go find some guy and have sex.
Right.
So don't let women drive. And you don't ever have to worry about that. But, you know, this is taking it to a whole other level. The burqa, not enough, according to some conservatives in Saudi Arabia. And I don't think this is going to get passed, but the fact that it's even getting voted on is terrifying.
But should we be surprised? It is Saudi Arabia, after all. I mean, this, unfortunately, this is nothing new for them, really.
But, you know, that vision of those two eyes through that tiny gap in that burqa can be enough to drive a man crazy.
Yeah.
And he can't really control himself. He can't be expected to control himself if he has to see that in public. So maybe it's best that they just drape these women in sacks. I mean, of course, what's the thing? How are the women going to see once you cover their eyes?
Oh, I guess you could get some sort of like mesh of some kind that you'd be able to see through it since it's close enough to your eyes. But
still seems kind of risky.
Your eyes wouldn't. It's yeah. Well, yes, of course.
I think the best way to do it is just lead them around on a leash. You know, I can't think of a better solution.
Why should women even be allowed in public? They should just be smuggled out in sacks and put in the car and put in the trunk and driven around the trunk of the car so they can't see and nobody can see them. And then, you know, make sure that, you know, they have special tunnels so when you get them out of the car, nobody can see them when you're getting them. It's just ridiculous.
What they probably have in mind are those burqas that the women wear in Afghanistan. Under the Taliban, they might wear them now, but it's too hard to explain it in this format. But I think I've seen what they probably have in mind, though. And it's not pretty.
Here's the deal. Sexual attraction and what qualifies as pornography or alluring is such a relative concept depending upon the standards of the society you live in. Because in this society, the notion that a woman showing her eyes would be considered immodest is laughably stupid. But in society where you don't ever actually see a woman other than your mother or your wife or your children, or siblings, that's virtually borderline pornography, to those people who just have no other source or outlet for, seeing women. And a lot of studies have been done to show that it really is a relative concept, that depending upon the level of apparel in the given society, the concept of what would be considered, you know, borderline pornographic changes. You know?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And so it really, it doesn't matter. Because again, like I said, in this country, eyes, obviously, just a woman walking around with her eyes exposed is not something that's going to draw a lot of attention. So, ultimately, these attempts to hide women and to keep them covered up by sacks, it has no chance of succeeding. Because it's just making that much more further what will drive a person crazy, a man crazy, or wild with lust over in a country where he doesn't have the opportunity to see people of the other gender.
It would be really interesting to me, and I don't know how you would do a study like this or get any information or data, but, you know, it'd be really interesting to see how much sexual perversion comes out of countries like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've already heard about how in Afghanistan they have their, you know, the thing is to have a little eight or 10-year-old boy to have fun with.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me wonder, like, you know, so what would these guys be into for pornography? Would it be like, you know, a chick walking around with shoes off, you know, and what I mean by sexual perversion is just that, you know, that they actually have to find alternate ways to, you know, get off, basically, you know, and fetishes aren't necessarily harmful, but, you know, I just think it would be interesting to see what kind of weird stuff, because you know that's what this kind of suppression of sexuality does is make the weirdest things seem attractive. I mean, we talked about like in the last year about how they wanted to make all the dummies like cut all their breasts off because they were thinking, oh, guys are gonna get hot bothered by a dummy in a street, you know, in a shop's window, you know. I mean, really, you know.
Yeah, and that was a big discussion in Saudi Arabia about how to make their mannequins, because guys were just going nuts over, you know, and they were making them out of wicker, and even that wasn't enough, and they just couldn't figure out how to make a mannequin that just doesn't drive the men wild.
So are there websites on the internet with the
mannequin porn?
Nude wicker mannequin?
Yeah.
I thought I had read once about the rate of pornography usage in Pakistan, which is also a very conservative Muslim country. And I seem to remember it was pretty high. Again, I don't want to take that for what it's worth. I don't want to be making unsubstantiated claims, so I'd have to retrieve the article, but it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, Pakistan is pretty, they're pretty hardcore. They have pretty hardcore Islamic law there as well.
Well, you know, and based upon everything I've ever read or seen, or even my personal experiences, at least for males, sexuality cannot be repressed. It's going to be expressed in one manner or the other.
Absolutely.
Whether that's with a consensual partner or whatever. A normally functioning man cannot go his entire life without an orgasm.
Right.
Or finding someone attractive or whatever. So these efforts to suppress sexuality are just doomed to failure, in my opinion. You can't do it. They're not going to succeed. So like Jennifer said, what you do is you just force them into the closets and rely on, you know, what might be viewed as deviant behavior in order to, you know, get their sexuality expressed.
Well, and there again, it's difficult to get this information too, but I wonder, like, what is their rate of rape in that, you know, in countries like that? You know, is some of it even reported as rape? Simply because if you repress sexuality like that in those ways, I hate to say this because I don't want to say that men will be driven crazy by, you know, desire because you repress it. But at the same time, I do think that would happen. And how many unwilling partners will they take?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's, you know, something that is.
There has to be some sort of outlet for, you know, a person's sexuality.
Since we're talking about this, it's up to you, Marshall. Should this be a time then to focus on that other sexually repressive religion, Christianity, and
certainly
it came out about young Christians?
Oh, yes. A fascinating topic that ties in with our recent discussion with Professor Daryl Ray, one of an Agnostic Salvation Hour favorite. A recent CNN study, just confirming what various other studies, is that why young Christians aren't willing to wait anymore. This was in the religion section of CNN's website, and basically, the title of that essentially says it all. The article written by a John Blake at CNN, never heard of him, I'm sure he's an excellent author, just basically goes on to say that statistically, based upon every study being done, unmarried evangelical young adults between the ages of 18 and 29 say that they're having sex slightly less, at a slightly less percentage rate as the rest of the population. Just almost identical, but it doesn't go on to say the exact percentage. Oh, 80%. It does.
Yeah.
80%.
Right.
Versus 88% of the rest of the population, which...
Right. Married adults, right.
Yes, okay. Unmarried adults. So basically indicating that, you know, you can try your wand, but all you're getting is an 8% success rate. And that 8% success rate may be just the result of a Christian, you know, certain Christians not willing to fess up.
Right.
Admit
you know,
it.
Or sadly by people who want to have sex but haven't found a willing partner yet.
Yes.
You know,
I mean, let's be, you know.
but a few things come to mind. I mean, again, as we were saying, people can preach holiness and love for the Lord all they want, and hallelujah, we're saving ourselves for till Jesus sends that precious someone into my life. But no, sorry, I'm getting off. But I mean, you can preach it all you want, but it's no match for the human sex drive, especially the male human sex drive. And you know, another thing, and I mean, someone wrote this the other day, and it made sense. I mean, just in general, no matter what. This crosses religious lines, whatever. People, no matter what religion they are or whatever, at least here in America, marriage in general is on the decline, and the people who are getting married, they tend to be getting married later in life. So maybe that kind of message might work for people who get married in their late teens, early 20s, but it's just not going to be realistic for people who are not going to get married till they're in their 30s or 40s. And then last but not least, I remember when I was in the fundamentalist movement, I would hear lectures by people who about why it's so important to wait. And like 99.9% of the time, I always found it funny that these very people didn't wait to have sex till marriage themselves. Yet they're telling all these other people to wait. So, I mean, they're telling people to do things that they themselves could no longer do. Then they'll say, oh, but now I'm a secondary virgin. I'm a born again virgin. That's what they call themselves, born again virgin. So,
well, if you can get born again, then just go out and have sex and get born again later. I mean, yeah, that's the deal, you know?
Exactly. I mean, apparently there's no limit to how many times you can be born again or how many times you can reattain your virginity. So just go nuts.
Right. You know? So this really, I mean, it's not surprising. What's funny is that many fundamentalist evangelical Christians would read a statistic like this, they would be shocked. Oh, you know, they would be alarmed. But I mean, why should they be? But you know, their religion tells them to be. Of course, you know, not to get off on a tangent, but the Bible itself doesn't even explicitly, clearly state that sex should be reserved till marriage. And we see a lot of sex between unmarried people in the Bible. So I just think, almost, I kind of think you can trace that back to the belief that, you know, women are property, you know, and they have to be pure, you know. And so,
yeah,
that's kind of how I see it, is because it seems to me that people don't focus as intently on male sexuality, but it comes down on the woman.
Right.
Which is why they don't want you to use contraceptives, because basically pregnancy is a punishment for you having sex.
Right.
So if you're trying to not get pregnant and have sex, well, you know, you're just a sinful whore. And, you know, we don't treat guys' sexuality in the same way.
No, well, we can't get pregnant either, you know.
Yeah, you can't get pregnant. You can get an STD. But,
yes, we can.
You know, you know, even at that, you know, scientifically we know that, you know, although men can get STDs, it's actually easier for women to get STDs. So I don't know. It's just the whole, it's this whole idea of if you're a woman, you know, you need to save yourself for your husband or whatever. But there's not as much emphasis on men saving themselves for a woman.
Mm-hmm. Well, because it's unrealistic. I think even most Christians know it's unrealistic, because you can love Jesus all you want, but eventually you're going to have to bust a nut. And that's all there is to it.
A relationship with an imaginary friend can only take you so far.
Yeah, and if that imaginary friend can't gratify you sexually, you're going to have to take it to the next level.
I tell you guys, I'm serious. I feel like such an idiot telling this, but it's truth. I remember, I mean, I was told when I was a Christian, I used to try to convince myself the same truth. It's like, don't, you know, if you're not married or you don't have a girlfriend or you don't have a significant other, just fulfill yourself with your relationship with Jesus. He's all you need. I mean, now that I think about it, it's funny that these people are so homophobic, because they were telling me to have they're talking about having a relationship with another man in almost homoerotic terms. It turns out this man is, he's imaginary. But I mean, do these people really believe what they're saying, that some relationship with an imaginary friend can, is supposed to just make up for unmet sexual desires? Give me a fucking break.
Yeah, it is pretty stupid.
Yeah.
And ultimately every Christian knows that, you know, that attitude fails because, right. And there's a reason they know that is because it's failed for them.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, unfortunately, one of the side effects of the Christian attitudes towards sex is that it has, particularly in the South, led to a lot of people getting married way before they should have, avoid the, you know, going to hell for having sex. Right. And this has resulted in huge numbers of divorces and divided families as a result of, because of people getting married way too early to someone they didn't even hardly know, just so that they could express themselves sexually. Now they got kids. By the time they realize that they hate each other, they've got two or three kids.
Yeah.
And so in a sense,
yeah.
Well, I'll finish up. In a sense, I honestly believe that premarital abstinence could be, depending on the circumstances, immoral. If it leads you to make otherwise bad decisions that you wouldn't have made had you the sex issue not been the factor that it is.
Yeah, that's basically what I was going to say. I mean, I actually find it really encouraging that they are basically saying, you know what, there's nothing wrong with having sex with my boyfriend that I'm with right now, and waiting till, you know, and not waiting until you get married, because I kind of feel like that's also, you know, and people would say, oh, this is horrible, but it's also learning how to have a relationship, because I'm sorry, sex, you know, people want to pretend that sex isn't all that important, and it is. It's extremely important. And if you get married to someone simply because you haven't ever had sex before and you want to have sex and you have sex and you find out that your sex life is completely unsatisfying, that's going to be one contributing factor to the fact that you're not going to make it in a marriage. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I kind of feel like, you know, being in an intimate relationship with someone, you know, and it has been pointed out that you don't actually have to have penetrative sex. And I'm like, okay, whatever. But you've got to have some kind of sexual relations with your significant other before you get married, because if you're not compatible, man, that's just not going to bode well.
Well, and you'll end up finding someone who is compatible. Right. Which, you know, if that's fine, if that's an agreement in your relationship, that's fine. But, you know, most people aren't comfortable with that type of arrangement, and it can be very problematic. A polyandrous relationship. So anyway, it's been over an hour, folks, and we didn't no disconnections.
Woohoo!
I think God was on our side. Our prayers to the flying spaghetti monsters clearly were successful.
Well, you saw that I thanked Krishna for the gill firing.
Oh, yes. For those of you who are Kansas University football fans, Turner Gill has been fired. We are very thankful for that. I guess Krishna is responsible for that one.
Yeah.
So anyway, all right, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
Good night. Bye.